Although the U.S. has faced pandemics in the past, the spread of the novel coronavirus comes at a very delicate time for the census. Traditionally, it's been taken in three different ways: by mail, by phone, and of course, by knocking on doors. But as the coronavirus spreads to more Americans, going door to door has become much more dangerous. And as Speer mentioned, an undercount could have huge impacts on the kind of funding necessary to respond to crises like the one we're facing now. Dr. Margo Anderson is a distinguished professor emerita at UW-Milwaukee, and she's an expert on the census. She joins us to give a historical perspective on how the U.S. Census has handled disruptions in the past. Margo Anderson, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect.
Thank you.
So to start here, how long have we been taking the census?
We've been taking the census since 1790. This will be the 24th decennial census in the United States. We do it every 10 years.
In that time, has it ever overlapped with a pandemic like this?
Not as we're seeing now. There have always been more localized issues with administration or operational issues, but this is truly unprecedented at the national level that we're seeing now.
You know, something that's been brought up quite a bit is the 1918 Spanish flu. But of course, that was not on a decade. It wasn't on a zero year. Do we know if at that time that had any impact on the census?
We do know that in 1920, in other words, a year and a half after the epidemic in the spring, there were newspaper reports and public statements by the Census Bureau indicating that the epidemic had affected their work, mostly that it slowed it down so that they needed a little bit extra time. And second of all, that it was going to affect the results mostly by slowing the growth rate, not stopping it, but slowing the growth rate in certain parts of the country.
Yeah. Of course, this year, a lot of people have been talking about breakdowns maybe of a different kind, but an issue with trust in the census. Given this pandemic and given the nature of what the census does, is that going to be difficult this year? The fact that there has been this kind of breakdown in confidence, and now there are a lot of folks who really just don't want to leave their homes.
Right. Interestingly, the Census Bureau and the census planning is always pretty complex, and they build in what are called redundancies so that you can answer the census four different ways. You can answer it by mail, on the internet, by telephone, and of course, if you don't answer one of those three ways and they don't get a form back, they come and visit. And it's that last portion that is actually threatened by the epidemic, namely that what they call the in-person enumeration or non-response follow-up. But the other three modes, if the technology holds, should go forward fairly effectively. So they're hoping that some of that planning for the internet census might mitigate what are obviously going to be huge problems in counting more complex living situations like students in dorms or the homeless or what they call group quarters. You know, we're truly in uncharted territory right now.
Yeah, but definitely looking at ways where it's not as door-to-door, a face-to-face kind of situation.
Yeah. Up until 2010, the chief administration was paper with, you know, in-person follow-up. Now we have the internet. A few years ago, you know, the worry was that we wouldn't have the bandwidth and so forth. We'll see if that holds. If it does, it will ease some of the other issues. It doesn't deal with the trust issue directly, but anything that decreases the workload of chasing households down will help the overall quality of the census going forward.
Yeah, and that gets to another question I have just about the census in general. Historically, do we know how accurate it has been?
Yes, we do. Starting about a half century, a little more than a half century ago, the demography and social sciences developed methods of measuring the undercount. Before that, there was always lots of anecdotal stories about either overcounts or undercounts or miscounts. But starting about in the 1940s, 50s, and 60s, we began to be able to use the sort of probability sampling methods that we use for public opinion polling to estimate the quality of the census. And those issues generated a lot of fuss and bother when it became clear that not only was there an undercount, but it was also what is called differential. In other words, the census counted some people better than others. And because we used the census for political apportionment and funds allocation and redistricting, the errors, if you will, led to misallocation of resources. The Census Bureau has gotten much better at that, partially because they were sued repeatedly from 1970 through 2000. So the undercount or the accuracy is better than it was 40, 50 years ago. There will always be problems of counting a diverse society, and the way we have to deal with it is sort of collectively deciding, well, good enough under the circumstances. And that's what we've done. In other words, except for the 1920 census, we have used the results to make the political changes that have been necessary. That year in 1920, Congress refused to use the results of the census to reapportion itself. And that was a problem.
What are the dangers of undercounting people in the census? I mean, of course, we're in the middle of this pandemic, and I know that the census is used for funds, for allocating different funds, as you mentioned.
Right. Well, I should tell you that there is already a very spirited debate among what they call the stakeholders and the social science professionals who worry about this during the off years when no one else is paying attention. On one level, the solution is going to be that conversation, just the way we've just had a 2.5 month conversation a little bit too late about how to handle the coronavirus. The conversation is already going on how we're going to get through this and get a successful census out of it. So having said that, yes, there are impacts. And if we don't as a country agree whether the count, say, of children, small children, it turns out, are a hard group to get good data on in the census. That affects school funding. So if a child is a 3-year-old or a 4-year-old is missed in the 2020 census, they will be a teenager before the next census comes around. And that will then affect the funding for that, for school districts and school lunch programs and all sorts of things for the next decade. Now, there are solutions to that, both in terms of counting and estimating other ways of counting children, but we have to, as a country, agree to them. And that's partially a technical and partially a political process.
Yeah. Well, Margo Anderson, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect and sharing your work.
Thank you.
Dr. Margo Anderson is a distinguished professor emerita at UW-Milwaukee and an expert on the census.